Hey everybody, welcome to the show where celebrity dads like Ryan come to tell all, I mean the good, the bad, and the funny of fatherhood, because you're doing it 365 days of the year.
Yes.
And you guys already know him from SportsCenter, ESPN anchor, legal analyst. He does it all. We still remember you from ABC and, of course, Centric, where you were on My Two Cents, my wife's show. Shout out to Chandra.
There you go.
But so you're also a father of two twins.
Right, twin
Not
boys.
Not just two kids, twins.
Yeah, twin boys. Twin boys, Blake and Cole. We are actually in their playroom.
Yeah, see all their toys? So if we get bored, we got some toys to play with.
You got everything.
And by the way, half the toys are broken because for whatever reason, this is all boys, by the way.
All they like to do is crash stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't really understand. You could tell them a million times, don't do it. But they just keep crashing stuff. They get into all these battles and then they throw everything all around. So half these toys are broken.
Well, I'm surprised you don't have holes in the walls.
Well,
because we don't see them yet. You hit them.
Some of those have been patched.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because when we were kids, we would have holes in all the walls.
Yeah,
we were fighting. One time, my head or my brother's head went through a wall.
What?
Yeah, went through a wall. My dad never patched it up the same. Till this day, 35 years later or something, this thing is still got a bootleg piece of, like, he didn't know how to, like, cut it out and make it nice, smooth, even.
Yeah.
So he just took a piece of drywall and put it over the hole, and that's all that's there. But he did what he could as a father,
what
so
are you gonna
I appreciate
do?
He was trying.
Yeah.
And gave us a story every time we see the hole. Hey, remember your head went through that wall? Yeah, we were bad. I don't know if your kids, because my brother and I, we would, like, terrorize each other.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I shot my brother with a BB gun.
Really?
One time, yeah. And then one time he was also like surfing down the steps on a mattress and busted his head. He was bleeding. He was the
wild,
one who was
man.
Always getting hurt. I don't
are
know.
You well, that's so, a good thing for you.
Yeah. Wait, are you older or younger?
I'm younger. He's 2 years older than I am.
Oh,
so,
really?
Yeah, and he was the one who was always getting hurt.
See, it's different with twins. So this is like, first of all, I always wanted twins.
Oh,
because
okay.
I felt like if you have twins, then you get it all out of the way immediately and you can later decide if you want more kids. So for me, it was kind of like, let's get this all done. So when I heard we were having twins, when the doctor was taking a look at my wife, she was like, look, I got a surprise for you. You got twins. And my wife was terrified. And I was like, yes. And then she was like, hold on, let me make sure it's not triplets. And my wife was like, no. But yeah.
Because one more would have been a little too many. They outnumber you. It's a little bit harder.
But the crazy, let me tell you, it's I love it. And it's something like I never experienced. You said your brother was 2 years older than you. I have two siblings. Mm-hmm. I got a brother who's 4 years older and a sister who's 2 years older. And these two guys, it's almost like you had a kid and his best friend at the same time.
Wow.
And the best friend never goes home.
Right.
And they're part of the family. It's just, I don't know who the best friend is in this context, but it's, they, for the longest time, have been best friends.
Wow.
Now they have arguments like best friends, which is kind of interesting.
Well, how does that go?
It's just, it always is the same. They're sitting at home, they're playing, it's a great game, they're playing together, and then all of a sudden, it's like, no, it works like this. And then you hear a little rumbling, no, not like that. And then next thing you know, in a couple minutes, you're poopy. I'm never going to play with you. I hate you.
Not the P word and the H
yes,
word. Oh my.
Yes. Yes. It's crazy. And then somebody's storming out. And usually it's like somebody came up with a direction and somebody else didn't want to follow it. So now the other person is dead to that guy.
So as the dad hearing all this happen, what's your response?
So I have to say, there's a couple things you do. First, when they were younger, I always tried to interrupt and say, oh, you know, who did what, blah, blah, blah. But you quickly start learning that's not going to really change anything.
Uh-huh.
They're not going to stop because or they're going to try to appeal to you.
Mm.
So then it's like, he did that. No, he did that. And then you're busy being referee. So for us, what we started doing was leaving them alone.
Oh, let them work it out.
Let them work it out. We got this book called Calmer, Easier, Happier Parenting because we needed strategies.
I need to get that book.
And oh man, this book is incredible. So one of the things it taught you was, if you start getting involved in it, you'll be the referee. Stay out of it. Let it work it out. If it doesn't resolve in a little while, then you come and you try to, like, all you can really do is, like, hear what they have to say, but you can't solve it. And most of the time, it's like they get angry, they leave each other, and they come back together in a couple minutes.
Oh.
Yes.
But see, would that be different if they were girl twins? Because my girls, they can hold a little grudge a little bit.
I can't do girl children. I don't even. My wife's sister has a daughter, and this girl, she is so cute. I love her to death. But from the first time I met her, we played for a couple hours. And then after about like 2 or 3 hours, she started saying, "Uncle Ryan." I was like, "Yeah." It's like, "Are you talking about me?
Uh-oh.
I see you in the corner. You're talking about me, aren't you?" Like,
oh, dang.
So
she's going in.
Yeah, exactly. And my wife couldn't stand it. And the thing is, and then if she gets upset, uh-huh. she can't be consoled for like an hour. Mm. It's like she's the cutest thing. But the emotions.
Yeah.
I can't deal. Boys don't have those kinds of emotions.
Yeah.
Boys are just like something happens, and then 2 minutes later, they forget it happened.
Yeah, and they're on to playing and doing whatever else they were doing.
I love that.
Yeah. Right.
People ask us all the time, "Do you want to have a girl?" I'm like, "I don't think so."
Yeah, you're good. You're good. Yeah. And that's why my wife and I, when we had the two girls, mm-hmm. 8 and 6 now, when we were thinking about having a third one, I was like, "Can we just adopt a boy? Because I don't want a mistake of another girl coming." Like, no, a whole house full of women taking over.
Oh no, man, I couldn't do it.
It's a whole nother level, but I love it. And you know, I get in there, I do the hair, and I do it all.
Well, I like that. That's kind of like I'm sad that I don't have that experience. I always wanted to, you know, like daddy's girl.
Yeah,
and she's always into daddy.
You can borrow your niece.
That's exactly. You know what's funny? That's exactly what I told my wife.
Yeah.
I was like, "We could just have her. She's amazing."
And then she goes home.
Yeah.
So talk to us about growing up. What was it like in your household, and what type of things did your parents put into place, especially when you and your siblings were fighting?
Okay, so me and my siblings, it was a little different because I basically lived with my brother in the same room my entire young life, but he was so much older than me.
Now, which one was that?
This was my brother is the oldest kid.
Okay.
His name is Jay, and my sister's name is Karen. She was closer to me.
Okay.
So my brother, being 4 years older, we weren't necessarily close. My sister and I were extremely close.
So your brother's like, "Leave me alone, mind your business."
Kind of.
You can't take
or
along.
Like, here, like my brother was famous. He loved Star Wars, so he used to think everything was a lightsaber.
Right.
So he would grab a stick like a 2x4 in the yard, and he'd be like, Here's yours. Now fight."
Dang.
And it was a lot of that.
And you're smaller than he is.
I know, and I was
so
little.
Unfair.
My brother is a big dude, and I was like little. So, oh man, he used to, but he was all right. My sister was kind of like a second mother.
Okay.
So in terms of arguments and things like that, my parents basically looked at it like, "You're the youngest. Mm. You should probably just follow." And my sister kind of like stuck up for me.
Okay.
So I didn't have to do much of anything growing up. And I didn't really get out of line because he's a big dude. Uh-huh. And she just kind of like takes care of me and does whatever I want.
Oh, that
so
works
that was
out.
Fun. Yeah.
That works out. So
nothing
she's protecting
like that
you.
Now.
Like,
yeah.
I'm going to say, now, does she still protect you to this day? Or
you
does
know,
she stick
kinda,
up for you in the argument?
She kind of does. She kind of does. But I mean, it's different. But mm-hmm. she always will be sort of like this exalted figure in my mm-hmm. life. Because the thing is like, so I'm the youngest child, and I think maybe you feel this way. I don't know. I'm wondering if you do.
Okay.
Sometimes when you have, like, because you're your third child.
Yeah.
When you have that third child, you've done it a couple times. So it's kind of like, all right, we don't have to do a whole lot of maintenance with this one. Do you have that?
No, we still have to do the maintenance.
I think
the third kid, we just don't care as much.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. Okay. I might have said it wrong.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
It's like the commercial where like the babysitter comes for the first kid, and she's like, "Here's their emergency contact for this, and wear gloves and hand sanitizer around each corner." The third kid is like, "Here, bye."
Yeah,
and
exactly.
You can be a murderer, and you're like, okay.
That's exactly what it was like. So my sister like jumped in that void, and she's like, "All right, then I'll be your mother." And not that my mom was an amazing mother, but my sister was always, my mom tells these stories of like, I wouldn't talk. I would only talk to my sister.
Oh, wow.
Or my mom would be like arguing with my sister to like stop blocking her from taking care of me.
Wow.
So my sister was like very nurturing from the very beginning. So
and she probably felt like you were also like her little doll baby.
Pretty
she
much.
Was like,
yes. She dressed me up and everything. She played dolls with me.
Dress you up and what?
She dressed me up. Like whatever she wanted to do. She would just put it, and then she'd play dolls with me. And I remember being really young and being like, I don't know if I really want to do this, but it's with her, so I'll do it anyway.
And you wonder why your brother beat you up.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
He was going in.
But man, it was, we had a great upbringing. And my parents, they were very, I mean, they had a lot of rules.
Mm-hmm. And this is in Philly.
This is in Philly.
Okay.
But the thing was, you got to respect everybody. That was key. And the real thing was, it wasn't so much like they told us what to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's that my mother and dad set a tone. And you had to follow that tone. And if you weren't following that tone, like everybody's respecting, like respect your parents or respect your elders. If you're going to freelance and decide this is the day I'm going to talk back to an elder, you're going to get smacked.
Ooh, that's going to hurt.
You know? Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, wait, you get smacked by your mama, and then when your daddy come home,
you
get another one.
Exactly. Now, I don't want people to be like, your parents abuse you. It wasn't like that.
No.
And I think
discipline.
Yeah, and I think we, can I just say, I think we sometimes misinterpret that. I mean, we are in a new day. I haven't laid a hand on my children. And I think my parents came from a different generation. It wasn't as though there were, there was anything violent. It's not like that. It's a little slap or a little discipline or a little something to let you know, like, hey, snap back. Like, get back in it.
You had nice parents.
Yeah, man. We had nice
I got
parents.
The extension cord, the hanger, the belt, the shoe.
No.
Whatever was close by.
Hope we get a little bit of that. But no, it's like, it's a different generation, you know? Yeah.
So then how do you discipline if you don't spank your kids? What is part of your discipline?
Man, it's hard. I got to say, because there's times where I'm like, we got to
upside
something.
Your head. Yes. Especially with boys, it feels like you can be a little bit more rough. Yes. Man. Handle them a little bit more.
So what I do, I learned this very early on. I'm not very like strict with my kids, but I have this thing as a dad, you like lower your voice even a little bit more and you get hard. Like you get that hard edge to your voice. And then if I'm really upset, like if half the time, you know, I gotta be honest with you, I love these kids so much. They just entertain me so much. I'm never really that mad.
So wait, so you're the one when they're acting up and they're being bad, you're trying to hold in the laugh. Like,
yes. But I know I gotta do something.
Yeah.
So what I do is if they're doing something really bad, I raise my voice and it like stops everybody. And I've been doing that since they were very young. Like,
how does that sound? Let me hear how did that
you, can I yell into this mic?
Yeah, go for it.
Like, you'll just be talking and you'll be talking to them and then they'll be doing something wrong and you'll be like, Blake, you know, like hit him up, like, and he's just like,
right.
That's when it gets everybody's attention.
Yeah.
And then if they're really going off, I tell everybody, stop right now, come to this room. I sit him down, sit down in that chair. Like, it gets really,
it's very stern.
You
scare
really
me.
You get, you know what it is? You don't get, and this is what I do. I don't get like overly stern because you don't want to look out of control.
Yeah.
But I get like very stern, very firm. I don't take my eyes off of them. I get on one knee because, you know, that's how tall they are. You get eye level with them. Look them right in the face when they're answering me. Look at me. Look at me like that. Uh-huh. I find that that has more of an effect than me grabbing them or shaking them. Mm-hmm. That's, I think, going to rile them up more. But once they know dad is serious, he doesn't yell a lot, that's the thing. You can't do it all the time.
And how old are the twins now?
They're five.
Five, okay.
And you know, at that age, the thing is, you got to look, at least for me, I look at it like they're testing.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of it's testing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of it is, and we learned this really early on, a lot of it is kids this age, they don't really know how to communicate in the way that you and I do. Mm-hmm. So in the same way that I get frustrated and don't always share my feelings, how am I supposed to expect that they, at 5 years old, are going to be more advanced than me and somehow miraculously share exactly the way I want them to share as I would? It's never going to happen. So they're going to do their little antics and act out and all that kind of stuff. Another thing is, they're going to seek attention sometimes. So you just got to stop it. See the extreme case. If that's the case, to me, get real firm, get in their face, and they will stop.
You make it sound so easy.
It's
so,
not. It works. It works like 20.
That's all you gotta do.
Let me tell you something, folks. It works 20% of the time.
So what
the
are
rest
some
of the time,
the,
it's mayhem.
What are some of the other techniques or strategies you've tried to use discipline that did not work?
Okay. You know, and we've read books. A lot of this, like, how are you feeling? And like, tell me how you're feeling. They just like walk all over that.
They don't.
They're just like,
I find
what?
That mine, they don't answer, especially if they're emotional at the time. They're just like.
Exactly.
Or they're just like, or they're mad. Like, I get this from my middle child.
Exactly.
She'll squeeze the anger out.
Yeah. We read a book that was like, ask them how they're feeling. Like, you must be feeling frustrated, all this kind of stuff. I'm like, how are you feeling? And they're just like, I don't know, I hate them. Like, I don't, what am I supposed to do with that? Like, I don't, that doesn't work for me.
I tell them they're not allowed to hate their siblings, so you're not allowed to hate them. I was like, I don't know if they'll believe that, but you're not allowed. Yeah. We don't do that.
Yeah. And they're like, we'll do it when we feel like it. I don't know what to tell you.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But wow, that's interesting.
The other thing that doesn't work for me is this idea, like, when I'm trying to talk things out, but I use too many words, like, you don't want to do that because if you do that, if you treat your brother like that, then he's going to be really upset. And how would you, He didn't hear me once I lost said, him. You don't.
Yeah. Like, he was like, what the, this guy? Yeah. I'm not listening to this guy. Like, they just don't care.
So, I like, 90% of what you do doesn't work. But I feel like, honestly, the one thing I find that happens every single time is eventually they come back to center, which is especially if they're arguing. Eventually, it's going to be maybe 10 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes. Eventually, they're going to be okay. So a lot of times, you just have to let it ride.
So I'm afraid they would kill each other. If you lock them in a room, y'all work it out. It may not go so
they
well.
They may, but then I just record those situations and make sure that I'm covered.
No, I did not do it. Yeah. Right?
See, officer, this is what really happened.
Oh, that's funny. But, you know, I think you're talking about you explain too much. My wife, she will use big words. Oh. And I'm like, they don't what that means. Yes. They don't know what you're saying, but they're gonna learn today. Yes. They're gonna figure it out. But you know, I think sometimes, like you were mentioning, the tone is scary enough. Like, the tone will make them cry, and sometimes the disappointment that they can sense in you is what hurts them most.
I got this from my father. It's like, you have to find what works for you and use that, and preferably that's something that doesn't involve crazy violence or hard threats. My father is and I'm not saying that doesn't happen sometimes.
Right.
My father is a psychologist.
Oh.
And I'm telling you, this man, I hope he's listening to this because he may be smiling. This man he just knew how to get to you. So for example, with me, like, he never really raised his voice, but he would look at you and have this look in his eye like, I'm so disappointed in you.
Oh,
just shaking his head. And it was like, you could punch me 50 times and it wouldn't feel as bad as that.
Wow.
Just.
But he also knew the mind games. Yeah. He knew how to play and toy with it because he already analyzed
it. I hated it because I was like, why is this affecting me like this? And he would just be like pulling the strings. But the thing is like, he never had to raise his voice. He never did. That's what worked for him. For me, the tone thing works for me. And I think every parent has something that works for them. And sometimes you forget it works for you. But I just like to remind myself, like, it's not going to work all the time. But it's like, it's like the extreme thing. I feel like all kids need to know that there is a PO'd point for their parents. And they need to know what that line is. That's the hardest thing for me about discipline. When you can't, and it doesn't always work, but when you can't get your kid to understand what that point is for you, that's really frustrating for a parent, right? Because then it's like, what am I supposed to do to stop this kind of behavior?
And why do they have to bring you to that point every single day? It's like, we went over this yesterday. You know what my boiling point is, and yet you're doing it again.
But see, I look at that as like, they are trying to get their own sense of control. I try to look at a lot, honestly, and this is...
That's your dad's side coming out of you. You're analyzing, psychoanalyzing the situation.
You know what it is? I look at them, and I'm always like, I don't know. My wife and I have a different perspective. She tends to think like, how come they don't act like this? Like, they should know better. And I tend to look at it like, they're only five. So, like, how much could these kids actually know?
But I bet they don't act like that for the babysitter.
They don't. And you know, this is
so
a
they
funny,
do know.
Yeah, and they don't do it at school. And it's like, I don't, we've thought about that endlessly. Because at school, everybody's like, no, they're amazing kids. They're awesome. And we're like, well, then why do they act like this at home? But the thing is like, somebody just told me, like a parent told me the other day, they were like, you know what? That's just the way it is. They don't act up in front of strangers. That's what kids do. And somehow they know, somebody told me it's because they feel comfortable at home with you. Okay. So they're going to be more relaxed. But when somebody else is around, their guard's up and now they're going to act differently.
So what did you learn from your dad in that psychoanalyzing of the situations of the kids that you are using today?
Mind games. You can still use them. You can still use them. So let me think. I try to tell them the other day. Well, there was something that happened the other day. Let me try to think about this. The other day, they were doing something bad. Oh, they were using bad words. Ooh. And I told them, we have like a thing
what bad word was?
Well, hate. Hate's always a
and
tough
poopy
one.
Head.
And poopy
head.
Yeah. I'm okay with poop. Okay. Poopy head. I'm okay with all that. But hate is not good because hate just becomes, I always try to think of it like, if they say it too much here, they're going to say it out there. And it just, I don't like the way it sounds.
Yeah.
So hate's a bad word. So like, this is the good thing about them being five. They don't know anything. So they were like, you know, they get penalized like a quarter when they say hate. And this kid kept, one of the kids, I think it was Cole. I got two sons, Blake and Cole. And Cole kept saying the word hate. Then I was like, hey, you know what's going to happen if you keep saying, hey, I'm going to keep taking away quarters. And you see that money in your piggy bank? He was like, yeah. And he's got like 20 bucks in the piggy bank. So that's a lot of money. Uh-huh. I'm like, you see that? Like a couple more times you say it, it's all going to be gone and you're never going to get a present again. They're like, wait, what? But there's a lot of money in there. I don't think it's nearly as much as you think it is. And they're like, but I had all these dollars. Yeah, that's not as much as you think it is. You say it three more times, it's all going to be gone. Now they would, on the quarter basis, have to say it, I think about 80 more times.
Dang, but they don't know that.
Yeah, they're not good with the math yet. It's okay.
So needless to say, stop saying hate for the day. And that's all we want to accomplish.
Well, it sounds good. It sounds like an effective technique.
Mind games.
Yeah, and Ryan Smith, you guys. Hey, everybody. I just want to remind you that this podcast is brought to you in part by Comcast. And we need your help to spread the word. So please subscribe, share, and set up alerts about new episodes, which are released every single Wednesday. Also, go to our social media pages at DaddyDuty365 to follow, share, and repost. And don't forget to tell a friend. All right, now it's time to get back to this awesome interview. Ryan Smith, you guys, ESPN analyst, the legal analyst, and anchor. He knows the tricks to keep your kids in order. It doesn't work all the time, as he mentioned, but at least it's working right now. And these are some of the things that you have to use. I think it's every time you miss out on something, you got like, okay, that's not working. Let's try something else. And you gotta, and you really have to sometimes be a partner with your spouse and say, okay, we got to go, because they'll divide and conquer.
Yeah, that's a huge problem. And you know, we have a different problem here. So I'm being an anchor and a correspondent. And actually, I work at ESPN, so that's in Connecticut. We're here in New Jersey. So I'm away a lot. And the biggest problem that we've had is like, we have an au pair. She helps us out. She's a young lady who lives with us. I go away, right? We have a whole discipline. Like, this is how it's working with the kids. I go away for a week or two. I come back. And not only is it like, you haven't been here, things have changed. But I'm like, wait, what happened to all the plans we had? And then I'm trying to enforce that. And everybody's looking at me like, dude, you haven't even been here.
Right.
Like,
you better not bring that up.
And I'm confused. And we used to argue about it constantly. And the thing is, the kids find it confusing. So it's not anybody's fault. But like, it's hard being a dad who's not here a lot, coming home and trying to get back into it. So one way we started looking at that was, you know what? If we can't do the plans, we got to triage this thing a little bit. We try to talk, keep up with each other. Dafina will tell me, Dafina is my wife. She'll tell me, look, Blake's been whining a lot. This kid's been whining all the time. We got to talk about whining. I need help from you on this. But he's been whining a lot. What do you want to do? Like, I can't take this anymore. And so we'll talk among the three of us and be like, all right, let's try to ignore him when he whines and send the message that if you whine, you get, I tell him all the time, if you whine, you get nothing. So we try to do that stuff, but I got to be honest with you. It's I wish I could give people a solution if they are traveling parents, but there really is none. It's like you got to triage and try your best that you can to stay on the same page.
Well, we always encourage everybody to comment below, comment on this post if you have something that works for you, whether it's wine,
I want to know
traveling.
Please,
you know, continue the conversation online because there are a lot of great people that have ideas out there, a lot of great ideas, and a lot of things that they've tried that didn't work or did work. So we're always asking people to write in and let us know what worked or
didn't. Let me know what works with whining.
Whining, that's a hard one because, you know, it's there's emotions where they can't express themselves, I think it is. And then that's part of it. And I think it's that goes back to the testing. They know sometimes who's going to give in first. Are you going to give in to the whining first, or are you going to give in to just, okay, be quiet, just take what you want? You know, but I think Super Nanny used to always talk about how
Super
you just
Nanny.
Have to let them be and don't pay no mind to them. She said, don't even address them. Don't kiss it. Like, don't stop. Okay, stop. Or if you stop, just ignore them. Walk away. Walk away. Because then even talking to them to say stop is giving them attention.
That's the thing. We were talking about this the other day. One of my kids, he likes to be silly. It's almost like a little comedian. And we figured out that, like, for kids that age, any attention is good attention, even if it's negative. So it's like, if they're getting a rise out of you, that's like the attention that they want.
Yeah.
It's hard to know that in the moment, though.
Yeah.
But,
And one of the things we try to do, because sometimes it's just like, oh my gosh, you're just like, stop.
I can't stand it, man.
Yeah. So we try to, I try to tell my son, Carter, I'm like, okay, just breathe.
Does that work?
Breathe. Sometimes it works. Sometimes
really?
And breathe. And then I count it. Then we're going to count to three. And you're gonna be done with this whining. And you're going to be done with this crying. And it's like 3, 2, 1 or 1, 2, 3. And then sometimes he'll stop and sometimes he won't.
Can you give me a percentage of how often that works?
50-50.
That's like pretty 50, good, 50, man.
Yeah, but you know, it depends on.
He keeps telling me about that. And I'm like, that's not going to work. But now I'm encouraged.
Yeah. And I just try to set that calm tone. That, okay, yeah, we're going to breathe together. And I literally go.
Yeah.
And I go. And sometimes it depends on if he's just whining because he wants something,
yeah,
or if he's whining because someone hurt him.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
And I try to allow him to have those emotions because, you know, we were always raised with don't cry, boys, yeah, don't cry. And I'm like, it's okay to cry. I even tell my girls, you can cry if somebody's hurt you, mm-hmm, physically or emotionally, or if you are hurt, you fell and did something like that. You crying and whining over a toy or you didn't get a snack, we ain't having that.
Yeah.
We're not doing that.
That's what we fight. That's what we fight. And it's like, mm-hmm, this is the one thing I do not like about twins. Mm-hmm. It's like cumulative. Yeah. When one guy starts acting up, the other guy's like, I got to jump in on this.
Right.
Like, he's whining. I'm whining too.
You've got double trouble.
Man, it's like, come on.
So what I also do is I start to take things away. My kids hate losing snack. They don't care about whoopings. They don't care about punishment. You take away snack, it's on. Like, oh, world is over.
Really?
Take away snack. So I take away snacks. I would say, if you continue, I'm going to count to three. If you're still crying, no snack today.
Can I admit something to you? Uh-huh. I'm not so good at that.
Oh,
I got to get better at
that. Saves
that.
Me money. I'm taking it away. Look,
I'm not so good at that. It's like I sit back and I'm like, uh-huh, I have this old, I'll totally admit something to you guys. I have this old, like our kids were 3 months premature, and it was a really hard time for us, like really hard. They were born, they were only like 2 pounds, 11 ounces, and 2 pounds, 14. They fit in the palm of my hand.
Wow.
And ever since then, one thing my wife and I kind of fight, they're perfectly healthy, perfectly happy. Mm-hmm. They were in the hospital for months, but they're great now. Mm-hmm. But one thing we fight as a result, as you're saying that, is like, food sometimes becomes an issue for us because the first couple years we really had to focus on them eating and gaining weight and getting bigger, and now they're like huge, but
they're catching up.
Yeah,
right?
But it's but still it's like mentally, I think like I don't want to deprive them, and I know as I'm doing it, it's the wrong thing. But the problem is it stops me from doing what you're talking about.
Okay, so in that case, take away the snacks that they want. And I say, you can have an apple. You can have an orange.
Yeah,
you
want to
eat, have
one.
A banana. That's your snack for the day. And I'm like, no, I want chips or whatever unhealthy thing they get with their little Lunchables or whatever thing. I'm like, nope, you can have free. I never deny fruit or vegetables. You can always have fruit.
That's good.
That's what I tell them. You can always have, we always have like our fruit bowl. You can always have fruits or vegetables. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to ask for that stuff. All this other stuff, nope. Like Halloween candy, that lasts like you get one a day for a week. And then after that, I take it to work.
Yeah.
It's like, that's it. You're not getting any more.
That's right.
So we restrict a lot of those things. And so when they get those things, it's like a big treat for them. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's like energy bars that my wife made or no-bake cookies, which is like peanut butter, flax seeds.
So they
don't know it's healthy, but we treat it. And I even call prune candy. I was like, no, because they're so sweet. They think it's
candy.
You're just lying
to them.
A little bit. But they think it's candy. Anybody want prune candy? And they're like, oh, that's some prune candy.
You want some broccoli candy?
They're not going for that one.
Great. Here's some liver candy.
They're not going for that. But I tried to say, okay, you're not going to get the sweet stuff or the things that they really want or think is a treat. But they still were able to eat. I'm not going to starve the kids.
You can't eat today.
I'm like, I don't know. Get on the steps. No, we're not doing that. But I'm saying that's an alternative for you to try to do where you don't have to feel like you're depriving them of anything. You're taking away stuff they don't need anyway.
Yeah. The other thing we struggle with is, and this is another thing that definitely relates to twins. So they spend so much time together. And if you're like, let's say, they don't watch TV during the week. That's a hard rule we have. Nice. They can only watch it on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And when they're watching it on the weekends, let's say one kid is acting up. The impulse is to ban TV, but it's really hard to ban for one and not for the other. Mm-hmm. So like, because where do you take them? And they're
always
together.
Set them to their
room. Yeah, that's
solitary confinement.
That's what we try to do.
And I'm like, and you better not play with none of those toys.
Yeah, it's like, but then you're banning them, and then you have to physically, because it's like I always felt like when I was different ages and somebody, when I was growing up, when one of us would get in trouble or when one of us would get banned or something, we just go somewhere else because the ages are different. These guys are so used to being together that it's like you ban them, and then they're in the room, and then it's like you got to go with them. So now it's like you're the prison guard.
Makes it hard.
I'm like, I don't want to do that.
Well, then you can do shorter punishments. Go to your
That's
room
what
for
we've
5 minutes.
That's what we've been doing.
And 5 minutes for them is an eternity.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh my God. And then you have to hear, Can I come out now?
Yeah.
It's not even 1 minute. Can I come out now? It's been a minute and a half. Okay. I'm like, come on.
We do picks. We do picks. So each one gets a pick, but they get to pick their show, and you lose a pick. And
losing that's a good.
Pick is like you chopped off their arm.
Oh, yeah.
Like, now, granted, they're watching like 3 hours of TV for the day.
Uh-huh.
And each pick is like a 20-minute show or a 15-minute show.
It's a big deal.
But losing the pick, and it's not only losing the pick, it's that the other guy now has two straight picks. They're like, the humanity.
Yeah. And by the way, the whole time, the thing about if they're in the corner, if they're in the room, my wife got a digital timer. So you cannot ask if you can come out until this timer beeps. And then because
you got tired of hearing it.
Can I come out now? Can I come out now? Yeah, you want to hear all that. But that pick thing, I like that because they do. They have who picked last? Half the time, I can't keep track. I don't know. I'm not watching it with you. So I'm like, okay, you go. you go. Or whoever did the best in their school or their test or something like that or got up and didn't cause trouble. They got up first in the morning and then they get the pick. But yeah, that pick thing, that's a good one.
It's great. It's a Saturday morning. You want to get them dressed. You want to do anything. You want to get them to go to bed. I'll be like, whoever gets to the bedroom first gets first pick tomorrow. Getting first pick, man. It's just the funniest thing. They look at first pick like it's the first pick in the NBA draft. Like it's the difference between like getting Zion Williamson and getting like whoever's behind them. Like it's just, there is no second pick.
Yeah.
Like, that's not good enough.
That's a big deal. That's a big deal. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
But you mentioned something earlier I want to go back to. How difficult it was for you all when you had the preemies, when they were just born.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are dealing with that, but I don't think enough people talk about that and talk about the struggle that exists when you're living at the hospital, when you're going back and forth shuttling. How did you guys make it through that period? Because they were in the hospital for a few months, right?
They were in the hospital for almost 3 months. And let me tell you, this was like the hardest time of my life. Not only were they in the hospital, it was also let me say this, it was also the hardest time for my wife, really more for her than for me. They were born at the end of December, so December 26th. I started work at ABC. So we were living in Atlanta at the time because I was working for CNN. I started work at ABC in New York City on January 4th.
Wow.
And they were in the hospital, and my wife was alone with them all week long. I would fly down on weekends. She lived with my mother and my mother-in-law. So imagine what that's like.
Wow, that alone is stressful enough.
But also having kids in the hospital. I mean, she is like a hero. I know people, it's cliche for men to be like, oh, my wife is amazing.
Yeah.
My wife is like a hero because going through that, she held it down during this time. Now, how hard was that? For us, it was really a situation where we had to like have faith and trust in God. I mean, I can't say it any other way. A lot of times we just didn't know what was going to happen. When one of them was born, I was in the room and we had some really great doctors. One wasn't breathing and I didn't even know it because the doctors were like, he's fine, he's fine. Later they told us he was on the low end of the scale of survival and he just happened to come right out of it. The doctors did a great job. They got him going. But I want to tell you about one. You talk about having faith and believing that something will work out your way. They were so small and they were in such dire straits. We would come every day and then they would make us leave at night and we would have to trust the nurses would take care of them. We'd be there first thing in the morning. And this went on for weeks.
How did you leave? My wife, they would have had to drag her out of there.
Yeah.
I don't know. But I mean, it's healthy for you to have some type of detachment, right? Because otherwise you're just there staring at the glass all day.
Yeah, you're just staring at them and you're freaking out. So the way we left was we leaned on each other. We said, you know, the rules are that we have to leave, but we can be the first people here. And I want to like, I really want to harp on this idea of like, you also try to find hope wherever you can. So they had in the hospital, in the NICU that they were in, there was this wall. You know, you're like walking around. You spend so much time there. You notice every, anybody who's been in a hospital for a while, they'll tell you, you notice everything about the hospital because you just have all this time there. And they had this wall of pictures. And I used to see it every day, like walk past it, but I never really looked at it. So one day I got a little bored and I saw this wall and I noticed it was a bunch of kids. And I assumed it was like, you know, we stayed here. Happy birthday. It was like a wall of kids who had been in the NICU. And I looked at all these pictures and you saw all these Christmas cards of kids thanking the nurses. And there was this one, I don't know this kid's name. There was this one really heavy set kid and his parents. And this kid was like, I mean, he was like a big kid, big old smile on his face. And I just happened to turn over the card. And on the back of the card, it said, this child was 1 pound at birth and look how far he's come. And I saw that, and I got to tell you, I cried right on the spot. I'm getting emotional just thinking about it now, because that picture showed me this is a big, healthy, happy boy, and he was 1 pound. My kids were 2 pounds. They can survive. Like, they can do this. Somebody put that picture there for me to believe that this is going to be okay. And I showed it to my wife, and we both cried, and we were like, you know what? We could come up with every reason why they might not be okay, but if this kid can do it, our kid can do it. And I have to tell you, every time I walked in the hospital, I looked at that kid, and I was like, this is going to be my kids one day. And you know what? Sure enough, that belief, I feel like that, I want to share this with parents. If you have a premature child and you're in the hospital a lot, I know it's hard, but moments like that gave me a positive spirit, and the kids feel it. Like, they feel it when you're in there worried. When they need this contact. Mm. They're always on your chest, your bare chest, so they can feel that contact. Mm-hmm. They feel it when you're happy. Mm. And I used to walk in there and be just so happy to be with them. Mm. That you could see the development. You could see them, even when they were like 3 pounds, they were already starting to smile, because we would be smiling. Uh-huh. And it's like you almost have to be as strong as you can for them and know that God or whoever you believe in has put them there for a reason, and it's to survive, and your job is to help make that happen. And that's what we did. It was hard as hell. I'm not going to lie. It was so hard. For a couple of years, it was hard. Mm-hmm. But, man, the payoff now, I look at these guys, and they are just as silly and crazy and funny and bad as they can be, and I couldn't be happier.
Wow. So what piece of advice would you give to parents who are going through that, and they're not taking it as easily, or, you know, going through troubles, and a lot of times they start fighting back and forth, and, you know, it's pulling the family apart because they're going through this situation.
Number one thing is be on the same page as best you can for the kids.
Yeah,
I know, even if you can't stand your spouse, can't stand them, can't stand how they're taking it, they can't stand how you're taking it, you're arguing about all these things. My wife and I did all of that. When you walk in that hospital, it's them, not you. I know it's hard for people to hear that. Yeah. I know there are a lot of emotions to it. Trust me, there were a lot of times where I was like, I'm so mad at my wife. But you know what? It's them, not me. When I walked into their room, my job is to be their parent. Mm-hmm. The other thing is, look for any source of inspiration you can find. It's cliche to be like, stay positive and all this, but I got to be honest with you. It's like you need to find something in that hospital, in that room, whatever it is, to give you a sense of joy to bring to these little babies. These babies at this stage, they need us so badly. In that NICU or in that hospital room where they're staying, I was a kid with asthma, and I spent days in the hospital when I was born. Mm-hmm. And my mom wasn't able to stay with me, so she bought me this little toy stuffed animal, and she told me that when I was young, she bent down, like when she had to leave the hospital the first night, and she was like, this is me. This is me staying here with you. And let me tell you something. Wow. I still have that damn stuffed animal. That stuffed animal was the center of my life for years.
You still have it today.
I don't have it here with me, but I have it in Philly. Uh-huh. That stuffed animal is, to this day, still, as a child, my prized possession. Wow. And I can't explain why. Mm-hmm. I can't explain why. But all I can think of is, my mom poured love into that animal, and even as a baby, I felt that. That is how I believe our kids are looking at us, and they take all those little cues from us. So whatever you can do, if you can't be there at night, buy them a stuffed animal and pour love into that and tell them, this is for you, this is me in that hospital. They will feel that. Come in that hospital with a smile, share your love for them. They will feel that. I believe that that helped bring our kids through that tough time. Yeah. And it's because, like, no matter what we were going through between each other, we didn't bring that into that hospital room.
Wow. See, now I see why you became such a good guy. You had three mothers, your mom, your sister, and the teddy bear.
I had a lot of mothers, man. That teddy bear, man, I'm telling you, like, I never let it go. That thing is, like, missing eyes and everything. No more fur. Don't care.
Isn't it amazing how the smallest things that seemed small at the time could mean so much just because it was, you know, dedicated or given to you by your parent?
Yeah. My kids still have stuff like that, too. Yeah. It's like stuff they had in the hospital. We still have it. Wow. And it's just one of those things. It's like, we don't want to believe it, but I have to say, there is a higher being or whatever it is out there that puts us and these children together. And we have the capacity. The thing is, even if it's a hard time and we're struggling, we have the capacity to be able to share that with them. That's mm-hmm. why they've been paired with us. So as bad as you think you're a mother or a father, or you're mm-hmm. letting them down, or how could you let this happen, or whatever, we have been paired with them for a reason. We mm-hmm. have enough love to give them to survive.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they're surviving.
They're not only surviving, they're crazy as hell. So the downside to that is they're going to drive you nuts. But no, it's all worth it, man. It's all worth it.
All right, so we can clearly tell that you love your kids.
Yeah, man.
So now it's time for the segment, I Love My Kids, But...
I like this. Okay, go.
Yeah, so you have to tell us something to just really grind your gears about your kids. I love my kids, but...
I have to pick just one?
Oh, yeah.
There's one. Like 30 of those.
You can give us the list and then give us your top thing off the list.
Okay. I love my kids, but I hate how they keep peeing on the toilet. And not in the toilet. I love my kids, but I hate how they break every toy they have because everything is a battle between the toys. Exactly. I love my kids, but I hate how every time I'm... Not hate. That's not the word I'm supposed to be using. Oh, my gosh.
I'm taking a quarter away.
Let me say that again. I love my kids, but... Whenever I'm home, they never give me a moment to have privacy. They come in every room. They never knock.
Even the bathroom.
Yep. Never give. So of all those things, I would say the I love my kids, but the biggest thing is, honestly, peeing on the toilet seat, it drives me crazy.
Yeah.
I got to wipe down the bathroom every night. And it's like, and we're just learning potty training at night. So that's like you wake them up twice at night and then you wake up in the morning and it's like, great, I get to clean the bathroom.
And not only the seat, all around the
all
toilet,
around.
The walls.
You know what? I didn't think about that. I just thought I had to clean the seat.
Yeah.
Until one day my wife was like, what's all these pee puddles doing in the bathroom? I'm like, what? It wasn't me.
Oh, that's so... I know. She's looking at you like...
I was like, I don't think I did that. And I was like, was it me? Oh, no. It was the kids.
So so what you could do is at night you make them sit. So you make them sit on the potty so they don't cause such as big a mess.
That would be good. I just tell them to hold it down, but they're like, that's good. I should do that.
Otherwise,
and then I would just love my kids no matter what.
Man, there you go. They need to... Oh, maybe we need to invent something where it's like a pee guard. So it's like this little thing around the toilet.
Oh, my God, that's
so
genius.
So they can only pee in the toilet. Like, you should covers it.
I got it. Don't say... Yeah.
don't steal my idea. But yeah, it's got to be something out there. Man, I'm thinking like, cause yeah, we did the same thing. And he's three, so we got a ways to go.
Yeah,
yeah. But and then I also wonder, should we wake them up in the middle of the night? Because then their body gets used to waking up to go pee all the time.
It's true, and I think we're starting to mess it up. But my mom said the way they used to teach us is you pee and you have to sit in it.
Oh. And you don't like that, so you're going to learn to stop.
Yes.
That's like torture.
I love the old school parents.
Today, that's not allowed. They're like, you torture 2-for-1 kids at your door. Like,
I know. Yeah. I know, but it makes sense, though, because you'd be like, okay, I'm tired of laying in my own pee. I got to go to the bathroom.
Yeah. It would probably work, but
to bring this
let's
back.
Just not tell anybody if you do it.
Oh, I'm sorry. We just told all of you.
Maybe don't try it.
Maybe that wasn't my mother saying that. Was some strange woman.
Right. Now, since your kids are still young, they're only five, then you might get a kick out of this.
Yeah.
This is called Daddy Rhymes.
Okay.
So where you sing your kid's favorite song or whatever they like what you sing to them.
Oh, my God.
Now, and if you can't think of one that they like, you have to make up one on the spot. So I hope you
got
one.
All right. I'm trying to remember the theme. Wait, they have all these themes. Their favorite thing right now is PJ Masks. Can I sing a theme?
Oh, yeah.
Is that okay?
As long as it's a song.
So is it? Yeah, it's rhymes. Okay, that works. So what they love is they love it when I do this. So into the night to save the day. Who are these heroes who'll show you the way? PJ Masks is the PJ Masks. PJ Masks is the PJ Masks. Cause bedtime is the right time to fight crime. I can't think of a rhyme. PJ Masks is the PJ Masks. PJ Masks is the PJ Masks. PJ Masks.
Woo!
Yeah.
Give it up for Ryan Smith, everybody.
I watch too much TV.
Yeah, yeah, especially PJ Maxx. Yeah. That mask. They may actually have you rewrite that for
I'll do it.
Know, sing it the
theme I'll
song
do it.
For the
Look,
show.
Royalties, right. man. I'll sing right. that for you.
Oh, man. Well, we really appreciate you joining
man.
Us
Anytime
today.
Fun,
now, I had a lot of fun, but before you go, because we're almost done, last thing we need you to do is give a piece of advice to Ryan Smith before he had kids.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, one
piece
of advice
to
me
before
the kids.
Before I had kids.
Besides, buckle up your seatbelt. Yeah.
Stop thinking you're going to have a life because that's over. Your life is your kid's life. Because can I just like share this real quick? My wife used to say to me, these kids are going to be like with us. If we want to go to France, they're going to come along and sit at the table and eat whatever we want to eat. They're going to do this. They're going to do that.
Nope.
That
nope.
never happened. So my thing is like, Ryan, back then, I wish I could have told you, you will not have a life. Your life will be your kid's life. Get used to it and get over yourself.
So now a soccer dad.
Yes.
So when you go to Paris, which you do, best family vacation ever.
Yeah.
We just went this summer. We went
you
to
did?
Paris, France, and we went to
what?
Disney, Paris Disney and
what?
Everything.
That's what I'm talking about, though.
But we didn't take the kids. We took a picture of the kids. It was like a 4-foot picture. So everywhere we went, we rolled out the picture and took a family photo with the kids.
Are you serious? So you didn't go with them? So they didn't get to go?
They stayed with grandma. We took the picture. They were there, you know, in spirit.
So you basically threw it in their faces.
Oh, yeah. We showed them the pictures when we came back and everything. They were like, you went to Disney without us? I said, no, you were right there in the picture. See, that's not us. That's not fair. Yeah, they didn't like it, but it was hilarious.
Oh,
and we had a good time. We enjoyed ourselves. No fighting, no screaming,
oh,
no yelling.
Oh, gosh.
At Disney.
Oh, really? But yeah. Can I give Disney advice?
Never.
This would be the advice I'd give myself before I was a dad. Do not take 5-year-olds on a 7-day cruise.
Oh, no. That's, well, they have that
Disney cruises are amazing, mind you.
Yeah, and I hear they have like
but,
the
oh,
babysitting
no.
thing, though. You couldn't put them in there with the...
Yeah, but man, I can't leave them there 24 hours a day.
Why not? They have games, they have
they
toys,
revolt,
they have
and
plays.
The Disney people are like, yo, you got to pick up your kids. So then you come and get them. That was insane.
Oh, okay. Well, good advice
yeah.
to Disney and to the parents out there. The
yeah.
short cruise.
Not that it's not amazing.
Short
cruise.
Cruise.
Short cruise.
Very good.
For 5
years. All right. Thank you, Ryan Smith. Right. We'll watch you on ESPN.
Yes.
All right.
Yes.
Cool. Thanks.
Sure.
Hey, everybody, before you go, we just want to say thanks again for watching this episode of Daddy Duty 365, but we also need your help to get the word out about this new podcast. So please subscribe, follow, share, and set up alerts to be notified of new episodes when they drop every single Wednesday. And remember that this podcast is brought to you in part by Comcast. Thanks, Comcast.